Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the Live Issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and All Mystery Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, The World.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. First of all, thanks once again to Tom Molesky and Sawakato for helping me out celebrate our 100th podcast episode. I know it was a bit of a long show, but I hope all of you were able to enjoy it from start to finish. And a big thank you to Tsushima Mire for sending me their latest album, Abandoned Human, weeks prior to its release. A review will be up soon, but all I can say right now is pre-order that bad girl as soon as you can. Now on to other matters. First and foremost... Not again. I'm sorry, listeners, but I'm currently babysitting Roger Goodell at the moment, and ever since the judge overturned Tom Brady's suspension, he's been acting a little fussy. If you guys can give me just like a little bit of a moment, I will be right back. Aw, who's being a crybaby? Does someone need a puppy? Come here, that's right. It's okay. Sure, we're full of gas, Roger Goodell. Oop, and that's not all that's full. Looks like someone made a stinky. All right. Let me take this off. And Jesus Christ, riding a unicycle through the Serengeti. Oh my God. It looks like the Oakland Raiders starting lineup down there. Oh, you think that's funny? Well, you won't be laughing when Tom Brady gets his fifth Super Bowl ring after this season. Oh, quiet now, I see, huh? Okie dokie, I think it's beddy bye time. Yeah, you sleep tight, Roger Goodell, and be sure to resign from your position like a good boy should. Good night. My apologies, folks. let's get back to the show and press play on this week's song list. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're going to start today's show off with the opening theme to this summer's anime series, Aoharu Machine Gun. And I've got to say, I love the Asian Kung Fu Generation vibe I get from this song. Here are the main seiyuu of the series, Tomoaki Mayano, Matsuoko Yoshitsugu, and Mikako Komatsu. And the theme song is called The Bravest Destiny. Chocolate Chip Cookies with RPG from 2006's Music Life EP. On October 7th, their frontwoman, Min Min, will be releasing her first solo album entitled Air Girl, so be on the lookout for that record once it drops. And joining us now are two of this year's producers for this year's Boston Festival of Indie Games, which are being held at the MIT Johnson Athletic Center in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Please welcome to the show Kinvey's developer evangelist and member of the acapella group Common Sound, Caroline Murphy.
Hello.
And Room and Board Games co-founder and treasurer for the Boston Games Makers Guild, Eli Kaminsky.
Hello. I actually also run it.
Yes, I know you guys. So how are preparations going for Boston Fig so far? Are we just about near that finish line?
Yeah, we are approaching the finish line. We are a week out from the festival right now, and looking forward to getting everything done.
Excellent. So my first question for you two, basically, is what got you both interested in working in the gaming industry itself?
Right. Well, I can definitely speak to how I got into it. Actually, I've only been doing it for a couple of years now. I started making a board game with a friend as a way to stay in touch after college, and quickly realized that I needed help, got involved with the Boston Game Makers Guild, which is a group of indie developers in the area, and had a lot of fun doing that, got involved, started being the treasurer for that group, was in charge of that group, and that's how I ended up in charge of Boston Fig.
And what was the board game you made?
So it's still a game that I'm working on right now. We're close to finding a publisher. It is called Ursa Minor. It is a game about bears mining honey out of Mount Honeycomb, rushing towards the center of a 3D mountain of tiles, trying to collect enough royal jelly to become the ruler of Mount Honeycomb.
It kind of sounds like a game that's, you know, very advanced, but at the same time, family-friendly. So it could be a good title to introduce young kids to this great world of board games that are just, like, really building up in popularity right now.
Thanks so much. Yeah, that's exactly what we're going for. We definitely want to be approachable to kids and get them involved in this hobby.
Awesome. And Caroline, same question. How did you get involved in the gaming industry?
So I got involved with games when my mother actually taught me how to program when I was little.
And oh, wow.
Started coding my own games from there, and really just did kind of simple stuff, and then hadn't really thought about turning it into a career until later on in life. But I've been running games and writing games and coding games since forever, basically.
That's awesome. I did notice that you once was working with a couple of our good friends of ours over at Firehose Games.
Yeah, that's right.
So what was that little atmosphere like when working with them? The same guys who were creating, like, Go Home Dinosaurs and Cat Lateral Damage.
Yeah, so Eitan is the CEO over at Firehose and remains a really good friend of mine. I worked there as general manager. I went and got my MBA, and so kind of switched my focus in games to more management type stuff. And it was great. They're awesome people, and they're putting out some really awesome stuff.
I totally agree, and Eitan's a great guy. I've met him many times, and I can say that he is so passionate about the work that he does. Not to mention, just a great guy to chat with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So is this the first year that you two are working behind the scenes over at the Boston Festival of Indie Games?
No, not for either of us. So I'm a festival founder, and so I've been working on it for... Well, I started in 2012, and we've been... I don't know, 2011? Oh, God, I can't get my timelines right.
I believe the first one was in 2012, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, first festival was in 2012, and I was doing an advisory position last year, but other than that, every year I've been on the head production team.
Oh, excellent. Eli, like, when did you first become involved with the Boston Fig? Was it around at the same time, too? Like, right in the beginning?
Last year was my first year being involved. I was just the treasurer. And then this year is my first year as a full producer.
Very cool, very cool. As someone who, like myself, I've attended Boston Fig every year since it began. And it's amazing just to see how it's evolved from its small classroom lab beginnings to the massive festivities that it's evolved into. Would you say the same has been happening behind the scenes too?
Oh, definitely. I'd say that we're better organized this year than ever before, and we just continue to get more and more organized every year. So it's really cool. We've got a huge team of very dedicated, really passionate volunteers who are all working on it. It's really incredible.
I was just going to say, it amazes me that we are able to run with such an amazing staff volunteer. We've got over 50 people working on the festival just because they love it.
Now, how many submissions did the Boston Fig get this year? Like, how many people actually submitted games? Not the ones that were approved, but how many people in general submitted something to be hopefully featured at the event this year?
So there were 110 submissions to the digital showcase, and there were about half that number to the tabletop showcase.
And what was the exact number that got accepted into it?
So we've got 48 in the tabletop showcase, and there are, I think it's 51 or 52 that are in the digital showcase.
Wow. It sounds like this may be the biggest one you guys are holding so far.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah.
So what are you most excited about for this year's Boston Fig?
Sleeping.
No, not sleeping.
You sleep after the convention.
One of the things I'm most excited about is our award ceremony. This is the first year where we've had all of our awards picked by our awesome set of curators. And we've got some really great games, and I'm excited to give them the...
Oh, no,
Eli. We lost you, Eli.
We lost the last part of what you said.
Well, if you wanted to answer the question while we waited for Eli, you're more than welcome to.
Sure. So I actually would just echo what Eli said. The curation process this year has been more refined than any years past. And as a result, I think that the award ceremony for us means a lot. It's now more refined and more... I think the games that we're going to be presenting to, we're very, very excited and proud to be giving them awards.
Fantastic. Now, for those who are new to Boston Fig this year, would you mind sharing with them some recommendations of what they could do, what they should do, even if it's like some of the games that are going to be featured at this event this year?
Sure. So the festival this year, we've tried to keep it really streamlined and make sure that the content that everybody's there to see, they can go and get to see. So in our downstairs area, there's going to be 48 different tabletop games that are in the showcase, as well as other tabletop games that are sponsors and indie exhibitors who are coming in. So I'd say definitely check out the tabletop area. That's going to be really exciting. The upstairs, we've got the indie showcase for digital, and then we've also got a bunch of different sponsors and exhibitors with indie games all around the table, the digital area. So I think that there are over 100 different tables to go visit and see. And some of the sponsors that we're most excited about are, we have HTC is going to be coming in and doing VR demos. So that's pretty cool and something that we've never really had at the festival before. So they're only able to give it to a couple hundred people, but we're very excited for the demos. We're looking forward to seeing what the technology is all about because it's really cool developing space right now.
Yeah, because I've been following the whole VR movement for the past couple of years. In fact, I was able to go hands-on, or rather eyes-on, back when the Oculus was just being slowly shown off at E3. And it's just amazing how much that has evolved in last couple of years.
Absolutely. I totally agree. It's such a cool space. And I think that anything that's bringing us towards the holodeck is a step in the right direction.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Now, you also mentioned tabletop gaming, because last year... I was not even expected to spend much time down there because I'm much more of a digital game person. But man, like, tabletop gaming has just become phenomenal just in the last couple of years. There are even games that have just been grabbing my attention that normally would not. And I'm like very surprised at how much more into the tabletop realm that I've gotten into thanks to the Boston Festival of Indie Games.
Oh, that's awesome to hear.
I gotta ask, do you have a favorite tabletop game that they're gonna be showing off this year?
I probably shouldn't say which are my favorites.
Right. Well, that might be a good point because that is kind of playing favoritism.
Right. I don't want to do that. I could give a shout out to a friend of mine who I know is definitely going to be showing his game at Fig, and who was also a former producer of Boston Fig. And that's Mike Kinnerick, and he's going to be showing off his latest game, which is called Interregnum, which is a game about fighting over basically being able to take over the crown after the king has died. So it's a really, really fun game. He's been showing it around at demos and stuff like that. So I'd say go check out Interregnum.
Excellent. A few weeks ago, I was doing an interview with these guys who were creating this tabletop game called Outchasers, and I was really happy to see that they were able to get into the Boston Festival of Indie Games because of how passionate they are about this creation that they are that they were making.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm happy to actually be able to check them out, you know, face to face instead of, you know, via just Skype.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's actually something that a ton of people have mentioned to us, is that a lot of them have crowdfunded or planning on crowdfunding, and having a place for people to actually come and put hands on the game and try it and play with it is really, really helpful for their marketing efforts.
And absolutely. And you know, I myself have been very vocally supportive of the crowdfunding scene. I've supported a lot of games on Kickstarter, some of which, like Rain World, Producer, and Moriah's Machinations, have been featured at FIG.
Oh, yeah.
So my question for you is, this is more of like an industry question, not a FIG question, but what sort of more positive things have you seen happen within this crowdfunding scene? And have you ever found any situations where something like this doesn't quite work out?
Sure. So I think that positive things that have come out of crowdfunding are that it's a really good avenue for people to be able to message and keep up with a lot of people who are interested in their games, and people who are fans of their games. It makes it really easy to kind of turn those fans into evangelists and put materials into their hands. So I think it's really, really good for communication. One of the things that's difficult about the crowdfunding scene is that I think that we're seeing kind of a saturation in crowdfunding, and unfortunately I think that a lot of kind of, you know, joke crowdfunding things have made crowdfunding platforms taken somewhat less seriously by people. And I think that's a shame, because a lot of the kinds of projects that people are trying to get funded on there, they're very serious about, but a lot of attention just doesn't get shown on them anymore, which, I mean, it happens with basically every single innovation in the game space. Like, look at the App Store. Like, when the first few games were on the App Store, they were wildly popular, and then Eventually you kind of hit the saturation point. And I think we're kind of seeing that in crowdfunding now.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's sometimes even a case where there's just too many good games and too many good ideas that are in the crowdfunding realm. You want to support them all, but then, you know, financially it's a lot hard to do that.
Yeah, exactly. You've got it.
So this year's Boston FIG keynote speaker is Susan Gold, the creator of the massively popular Global Game Jam.
That's right.
So what sort of knowledge of the gaming industry do you think attendees of this festival will pick up from her?
So Susan's going to be talking about a topic that I think is very near and dear to all of our hearts, which is that everyone can create. And I think that this is really important, because as the tools of production get democratized, it's really possible for anyone to make a game now. And as new people start coming in and making games, the kinds of ideas and innovations that we see are manifold. I think it's awesome to have people creating games who are not necessarily experts in games, because you get ideas out there that you have never seen before and never would have thought about, because you kind of get trained into thinking about games in a certain way if you are a huge game maker and game player. So I'm looking forward to hearing her talk about that, and I think that Global Game Jam obviously reflects a lot of that too.
And you know what blows me away too is a lot of these about these games, because, you know, as for people that do the game jam, it gives them a chance to like try to create their own title, and it may not be perfect, but then hopefully if they want to add on to it, they can hope maybe just like find some people that do work within the gaming industry and able to get the bugs out and create the game that they are hoping that comes out of it.
Absolutely. And even sometimes it's just a matter of going to a game jam can make somebody realize, like, oh, the tools that I need to learn how to do this are actually out there. They're available. They're inexpensive or free in many cases. And it can help inspire people to really, you know, push forward and do it themselves as well.
Mm. And on top of all this, too, you also have another guest coming this year, the Videri String Quartet. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. The Videri String... Videri, right?
I believe that's correct.
Videri String Quartet.
I've actually only ever seen it written also. So
Are you familiar with their music? I know you guys are brought them on, but I'm curious, have you yourself listened to them before?
So they actually performed last year at FIG.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they performed in between different segments that we had during some of the talks and the awards. And this year, we thought that it made sense to really just give them their own section to play a set of music. So they tend to specialize in chamber music that's video game music, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what their set list is. I don't actually know what it is this year, but it's a really cool group, and we're very excited to have them playing.
Oh, I had no idea they even there last year. I feel kind of bad about that.
Right, we feel like we didn't do a good job promoting them last year, so we're excited to promote them this year.
All right, cool. So are there going to be what other topics are there going to be showing off at Boston FIG? Like, what other, like, panels and such?
We actually don't have talks at FIG this year. We found that a lot of people who were interested in talking at the festival were people who really wanted to talk to a developer audience. Because developers are actually showing their games during that time, it didn't make much sense. So we're actually going to be having an event over the winter, which is the FIG Talks portion of the festival. So it's going to be a separate event. Right now we're looking at January 16th as our date, but that is subject to change based on other con schedules and things like that. But we're
right, like Backfest and such, yeah.
Right, exactly. So we're going to try to nail that down in the next couple of weeks here.
Oh, definitely. Keep us posted when the official date has been decided on.
Sure.
Now, what also blows me away about a lot of these games that you're showing off at Boston FIG is just how creative, how smart, and how much more heart they have compared to, say, like their AAA counterparts. What do you think the bigwigs from, let's say, like Ubisoft or Electronic Arts can learn from the indie gaming realm? And is there something that the indies can, in return, learn from the gaming giants of the industry?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to learn on both sides. So from the indies, I think that, you know, AAA and huge game companies can really learn about the way that art can be infused with creation. I think that something that a lot of indie games do really well is they do have a lot of passion put behind them, and as a result, you end up with this end product that is, in my mind, more art than it is anything else. And a lot of AAA titles, you don't get that same feeling, that same kind of passion behind it. That's not true of all AAA titles, but it can be, it tends to be. But I think that something that AAA titles do extraordinarily well, which I think is very valuable, is that they provide an experience that is so all-encompassing and huge. And that's something that you can only really do with a massive team all working together. And it's also, you know, AAAs are those providers of jobs. They're people who provide some stability in people's lives, who are game developers, and they also do a really good job at just organization and having people work in a team. Those are things that can be extraordinarily difficult for indies to figure out and learn, especially as they grow. And, you know, there's a lot of good models for how a really good team works together. I mean, you can look at Valve and a bunch of other companies like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's interesting, too, now is a lot of these AAA people, like a lot of the big names, are now going off and they're doing their own thing. They're creating their own independent companies and, you know, trying to create their own images that maybe the higher-ups at the previous places weren't letting them do.
And, yeah, it's interesting, right? You've seen a shift in a lot of media lately. Like, look at television. It's kind of the same trend. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of TV producers and writers have kind of struck out on their own. It's pretty interesting. I think it kind of speaks to a change in the way that we like to consume media, where, again, it's like the democratized tools of production makes it much, much easier for people to produce things on a lower budget. So you don't have those same restrictions that we used to.
Now, overall, what do you think about the gaming industry as a whole? Is there an overabundance of a lot of great games? Is there too many bad ones out there? Or do you feel like it's somewhere in between at the moment?
I think that right now, games are coming to an inflection point where the way that we engage with games, especially for the younger generations, is going to be just kind of a part of daily life. And I think that as a result of that, we're seeing more games than ever. So we're kind of getting saturated with games. Mm-hmm. And there, when you have a lot of saturation in anything, you're going to get a lot of good and a lot of bad. And it's hard for people to have a voice.
It's kind of like what happened with YouTube, where you had like one person would start their own web series and they would hit big. Then everybody on the planet was like, hey, we could do that too. And
exactly.
All of a sudden, there's just one too many web series that are out there. And we're also seeing it now with original programming that's like on Netflix and Hulu.
Absolutely.
And Amazon. There's just too many good things that we should be watching, but not enough time. And then at the same time as well, you've also got a lot of bad ones out there. But fortunately, that's why there's a lot of Let's Plays out there that show us why you should probably not touch that video game you've been hearing about.
Exactly. And I think that the way that this is going to develop is that specific kinds of content creators are going to be known for the specific kinds of content that they are creating. So like when you think of Tim Burton, you know exactly what it's going to kind of, what that flavor is going to be.
Right.
I think it's going to be the same thing for game designers and game developers in the future, where, you know, household names are going to be Sid Meier, you know, like to me,
yeah,
that's a household name, but it's certainly not for every American. I think that's going to change.
Absolutely. You know, that is very interesting you put that, because I can really see that this coming generation, names like Miyamoto and Kojima and Tim Schafer, these are going to be household names that everybody is going to know about.
Exactly.
It's kind of like how currently, right now, how Japanese animation, a lot of these directors like Miyazaki and Hosoda, how they're becoming household names now because our generation has been growing up with their works.
Precisely.
Now, the final question is for those unsure about attending Boston Fig, and I'm certain there's at least a couple of listeners still on the fence, why should they join in this year's festivities?
They should come because I think that there's no better way to experience somebody's creation than to have them show you. I really feel strongly that playing somebody's game, especially in front of them, and giving them feedback can be one of the most incredible and rewarding experiences for both creator and consumer. So come play people's games and tell them what you think.
I know that this year's hasn't even gone off yet, but are there plans for next year's Fig already in the works?
Always.
Well, Caroline, I'm really looking forward to this year's Boston Festival of Indie Games. For our listeners, please, this Saturday, go to the MIT Johnson Athletic Center in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Starts at 10 a.m. And how much are tickets this year?
Tickets at the door are $15, and you can get them online ahead of time for $12.
Excellent. Caroline, thank you so much for joining me here on the Wars and Rage. And I feel really bad that Eli had to cut out like that. But, you know, reception is a bitch sometimes.
I know. Someday we'll all be robot people. That'll be fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun, too. Caroline, awesome. Thank you again. And hopefully I can run into you at the Boston Festival of Indie Games this year.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a lot, Evan.
Not a problem. All right. Coming up, we've got the newest single from Moira, the new band fronted by Alicia Grudecki, formerly of Vanity Theft. This song will be on their debut release, Asleep, Repeat, Awake, due out in the next couple months. And if you'll be attending the Dayton Music Festival in Ohio on September 18th and 19th, you can catch them performing there. This song is called Midwestern Waste.
Some nights I trace the skyline, a Midwestern waste, lined up like dynamite, and I get
reincarnated.
art school with water, and this past May, they released a live DVD from their recent tour recorded at Studio Coast in Japan. And right now, I'm being joined by my good buddies, Andrew and Jonathan Fleming from Wicked Anime.
Yo.
Hi.
Yeah. And apologies in advance if our voices sound a little bit cracked, because we just finished recording their show, which will be on sometime next week at the Nerdy Show.
Yeah, ironically, we record our show first, but
Evan's going to be released first.
Yeah, it comes out first.
So. Well, you put a lot more work into your recordings. I just use the Audio Hijack Pro and such and just piece it together that way.
That's right. We work harder than you.
No. Yes. But I invited Wicked Anime onto this episode this time around because one of the members, Jonathan, he and I share a very common best anime of all time pick, and that is Fooly Cooly.
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite.
We like it for very different reasons. For me, not just from the story, but from the music perspective, Fooly Cooly was the one that introduced me to the pillows. As my listeners will remember from last week's episode 100, where I just said, you know what, the pillows introduced me to this band and that band and this band and this band and this band and that band, and it just grew into what this has become with No Borders, No Race.
Right, and while the music is something that makes the show what it is, like, that the music is wonderful in Fooly Cooly, what it did for me was introduce me to one of my all-time favorite anime people ever, which is Hiroyuki Imashi, who was the animation director for that, and he went on after that to direct, you know, Panty and Stocking, Gurren Lagann, Kill la Kill, all that stuff. And I love the animation aspect of Fooly Cooly on top of just such a, what a mysterious story it is.
And I just like the show.
Now, the reason why we're talking about Fooly Cooly right now is because it was announced that Production IG acquired the original rights to Fooly Cooly from Gainax and King Records and are looking to maybe doing a remake or continuation of the show.
Yeah, they didn't really say exactly what they were going to do with it, right? I mean, they said that either, you know, like, there's perspective as to whether or not they're going to make a sequel, or if they're going to remake it, or if they're going to do something else. I really don't know. Or nothing at all. They could do nothing at all. We don't know.
This could be just all fan speculation built up to the point where this is just going to help sell more merch for them.
Yeah, that honestly was actually my speculation from the beginning. Was I saw that they posted it. We have the licensing to IG. But my speculation is, I honestly don't think they're going to do anything with it.
You really don't?
I really do not think anything is going to happen.
Okay, but here's the thing. When you think about, you know, you have Disney, right? Who they have a whole bunch of licenses that they just buy things because they're Disney. I don't want everything. We're going to take over the entertainment industry world. Everything's going to be Disney. They just hold on to licenses because they can. They have billions upon billions of dollars that they're able to just collect this kind of stuff. And they can just hang on to and do whatever they want. But in this case, we have an anime industry, which they spend, like, thousands of dollars that they have, all their money. They don't have billions and billions of dollars. They have, like, thousands of dollars that they can pick one thing. It's like, you go to the store and you're in the candy aisle with your mom and you're like I was last week, and it was like, okay, you can have one thing. That's what the anime industry is like when they collect licenses. That's why they license a lot of things that are already manga. It's because they know what's popular when they pick it. Very seldom do you see original properties. It's because it's such a risk to take original properties because you don't know whether or not it's going to make money.
Yeah. Right. And I actually made this point on Twitter about, like, hey, a lot of anime comes out that's based on manga. Why don't more American, like, production companies take comic books, the thousands of comic books that are out there, and adapt those into cartoons too?
Because they just want to keep making Fantastic Four remakes.
But the thing with Fooly Cooly is, they know Fooly Cooly is big. They know it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
They know that this is one of, like, the key shows that people get, that they watch it, and that's how they start to become interested in anime. It's this, it's Cowboy Bebop, it's Sailor Moon, and it's Dragon Ball Z.
Interestingly enough, Fooly Cooly is my favorite anime of all time, but if I were to introduce somebody to anime, I would not show them Fooly Cooly first.
And I can understand that because it is a very weird show.
It's unique. It is very unique. You know? Yeah.
Honestly, in the order, I would show them Cowboy Bebop first, and then I would show Fooly Cooly.
Yeah, I wouldn't even show Fooly Cooly in the beginner stages. I would go through the entire repertoire of beginner animes, and then I would go into the intermediate stages, starting with Fooly Cooly.
Okay.
We're talking weeks and months before.
I don't know if I would wait that long. Maybe I would wait a month as they're getting into anime to watch something like Fooly Cooly. I would say intermediate would be something more like Serial Experiments Lane.
Well, that is, I'm not even ready for Serial Experiments right now as an anime fan.
Yeah,
so
like, do I want to be confused and depressed? I don't know.
Yeah. Both confused and depressed. Oh, I'm hungry.
No, but that's just the thing, though. Studio Gainax is such a unique studio at the time. And when they created Fooly Cooly, they were doing something that nobody has ever done before. And even still, 15 years later, it's still something that nobody else has really done.
No.
You know, it's mysterious. It's better animated than, I would even say, half of the shows that are coming out now. And it's so good. It's so unique. And Studio Gainax at the time was a studio that, almost like Studio Trigger, they could do whatever they wanted.
Right.
Like, and that's why Studio Trigger happens, because they wanted to go back to their original roots, but Gainax became so corporate.
Yeah, exactly. Because when's the last time we watched a Gainax anime and be like, wow, that really amazed me?
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, I'm on
Gurren Lagann. Like, and Gurren Lagann was their turning point.
Yeah.
So, where they lost all the Trigger people.
Well, yeah, because that was the point where Hiroyuki Imashi didn't get to do all the things that he wanted it with it, and that's why the ending was so crappy. And then he was like, you know, I'm not doing this anymore. I want to be like the way that things were. And so he took his producers and he started his own club. You know, and I know that you mentioned this on our podcast, Evan, where you're talking about that. You're hoping that Production IG is smart and they take along some people from Gainax Studio Trigger to be at least consultants.
Absolutely, because you mentioned it. You mentioned Imashi. He was the animation director for it. Otsuka directed episodes 1, 4, and 6. And not only that, but Trigger would be best at retaining the original character and world design of Fooly Cooly.
Yeah, and I'm just so afraid, because I mean, Production IG is so straight laced when they come to this. They have amazing, don't get me wrong, they have amazing animation, like totally over the top amazing stuff. But they're just, they don't seem like Fooly Cooly. They're not that, they're straight-laced and all
yeah.
that.
I don't know. They are known for taking some risks here and there. I mean, look at Innocence, Ghost in the Shell 2.
And actually, I kid you not, I was just about to say Ghost in the Shell. Like, but that's what I think of. When I think IG, I think Ghost in the Shell. I'm just saying, like, and that doesn't read Fooly Cooly.
I think of the opening to Kill Bill.
Kill Bill, yeah.
Kill Bill. Or Anishi's backstory. And then you could also look at, even Attack on Titan, which is still a little bit straight-laced, but at the same time, it's big, naked men eating small, regular, normal people.
Yes, but, again, my what I said earlier, that was an already popular property that was in manga first.
That is true, that is true. And Fooly Cooly was an original. It became a manga after the fact. It became light novels after the fact. But it started out as an animated series, an OVA or an OAV, or whatever you want. Well, whichever the letters are in the right order.
I just say OVA, original video animation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that was the thing about OVAs, is that they could do whatever they wanted at the time. But now that Production IG knows that there's no risk involved with Fooly Cooly because they see what it's done,
they can
just swoop in and take it because they have all the money in the world that they want to do that with. I mean, that was the pick for the year, I guess.
Probably. My question for you guys is, you know, a remake, no. Do you think they should just not do a remake and do more of a continuation of a show?
I don't really think they should do anything. but yes, I think that I would rather see new content, if anything. Like, what if Naota was in high school?
Mm-hmm. And me, I prefer, I don't mind seeing anything. Like, I will because I don't, me personally, I don't think they're going to do anything with the license. That's what I said originally. But so I would be open to them trying anything, because if they do something and I don't like it, I'll just disregard it. You know, like, who cares? Like, it doesn't exist. I'm going to pretend that that didn't happen.
And that's where you and I differ, because I wouldn't be able to ignore this. I wouldn't. If they do this wrong, I am not going to be able to ignore this. I am going to be going on the YouTubes and the Twits and all that stuff, and I'm going to be speaking my mind about bad Fooly Cooly, because how dare you mess with my Fooly Cooly?
It's definitely going to be different.
But I think that what they should do is they should do something so far, like, if they're going to do anything, they should do a sequel so far after the original stuff that even if they do create new content, it's not going to touch anything that was the original. You know what I mean? Like, they could do that in the fact where, like, let's say that all the characters are in high school now and they're so much older and everything like that, that almost to the point they're completely different characters. But
would Haruko be coming back, or, like, what would happen?
You know what? That would be kind of cool if Haruko didn't come back.
You see, I have three ideas, and I apologize if this sounds very fanfiction-y, but I have three ideas on how this show could come back as a continuation.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, I would like you to rate each of them as I read them off.
Okay.
Okay, so my first idea is Haruko returns, Medical Mechanica is trying to take over the universe, and Naota and Mamimi are taking out Haruko's home planet, whose queen is Naota's mom and the king is Atomusk.
Okay.
Because that was one of the things that I always wondered about Fooly Cooly, about the world. Whatever happened to Naota's mom? They never explain it, not even in the manga adaptation.
That is one of the major mysteries about it. But I think the reason why it wasn't mentioned is because it is so of such little importance that they don't even bother to mention it. They don't even show a picture of her, so it doesn't even matter.
Okay.
You know, even if there was some mystery shrouded in it, I think somewhere along the lines in the series there would have been a point where a character would have said, "Hey, your mom," and then he would have been like, "Don't talk about my mom."
Right.
Then there could be sequels for it, but there was none of that.
Well, actually, now that I remember, there is a part in the manga where the dad asks, "Hey, Naota, what would you think about having a new mom?" And that's the part where in the manga he actually kills his father. It's not like a robot version like in episode 4. He actually kills the dad.
Yeah, I was always confused by the manga because it wasn't canon.
Yeah, the manga is kind of a weird, like, fever dream of the fever dream that was Fooly Cooly.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's the fever dream's fever dream.
Yeah, so I was actually very confused by it. I haven't read it in years. I think the last time I read it was 2011? No, 2008. 2008 was the last time I read the manga, so I have to go back and reread it.
Yeah, I have it laying in my attic somewhere, like my big box of manga that I can never, ever, ever part with.
Yeah, I think mine's in a storage unit.
Yeah.
But I would go find it and reread it, but I really, really don't know that much about the history of the manga itself compared to the anime and how it's connected.
Okay. All right, so here's the second idea, and I think this might be the weakest out of the three.
Okay.
Now an adult, goes on a quest to find Haruko after Earth comes under attack by an army of Kanti-looking robots.
I feel like that would go straight Gurren Lagann, like the end of Gurren Lagann.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, that it would just go right to throwing universes at each other, throwing galaxies at each other.
Yeah, just be like, ah!
Alright, what's...
I forgot about that.
Yeah, what's idea number three?
Okay, this is the batshit crazy idea I have.
Okay.
Haruko returns and finds that Medical Mechanica needs their help defending Earth. From what? Well, considering that Medical Mechanica's building is shaped as an iron, we can only suggest that the threat is clothing related.
Yes. I knew it. I knew you were going to say that.
The life fibers come back and the cast of Fooly Cooly team up with the cast of Kill la Kill. And it goes down to history as the greatest anime ever.
No, that would be... That is the most fanfiction-y one.
It is. It is. It is.
Crossovers. I would... Let's see. Going home with the bronze medal would probably be that one.
Because look, In our generation, we've seen crossovers with The Simpsons and Family Guy, Simpsons with Futurama, Simpsons with Rick and Morty. It's not out of the whole realm of possibility.
Yeah. What was the second one again?
Second one was with Nauta being an adult trying to find Haruko.
Right, galaxy throwing.
Yes, okay. Galaxy throwing.
That one's not too bad. I kind of like that one. I think I would put that one on gold, and then I would put your first one on silver.
Okay, the one where Haruko returns and they go to her home planet, where they find out that's where Nauta's mom is the queen.
Yeah, I think that one would be okay. I would switch a couple things around, like probably the fact that maybe Nauta's mom is the same thing that Haruko is. Like maybe she's like a pirate. She's a galaxy pirate.
Well, yeah, she'd be like the pirate queen, and then Atomus is the king of pirates.
Right. I'm thinking that. I don't know. That would be kind of weird because the reason why Haruko was looking for Atomusk was because she was in love with Atomusk. So if Atomusk is the king and Nala's mom is the queen, then she's technically trying to start a coup by cheating on the queen's husband.
And that would make a much interesting anime a little bit.
Yeah, which would be odd because that would mean that the mom cheated on Atomusk to make Nauta with his dad, and then his dad tried to get with Haruko, but then his dad was really a robot with Haruko.
It's very confusing. And not to mention, we
Cooley all over again.
Yeah, not to mention, we haven't even factored in Nauta's brother.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. His big. Oh my gosh. That's
yeah. Right.
There's something about his brother, though, that he wasn't really a key element to the story past the point that he's the reason why Nauta is the way he is. You know, like his...
Right. Well, imagine if there was a situation where later on, Nauta becomes the stronger person and the brother is now, like, the loser who couldn't make a career out of baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
I think that the reason why I put your second story there, the one where Nauta tries to go find Haruko, is probably the one that I would go with on top first, is because there's potential that Haruko would not be in it. And that, I think, is... It's really weird for me to say because I love Haruko so much as a character that I don't think that she would be back in it.
Yeah, well, because...
As much as I would want to hear Kari Wahlgren again.
Yeah, today, absolutely.
See, a Fooly Cooly dub with no Kari Wahlgren is wrong.
No, I agree, because Kari Wahlgren is my Haruko.
Yeah, exactly. I've never seen Fooly Cooly in Japanese before.
Me neither. And I've owned the DVDs for almost 12 years, and I've never watched it in Japanese.
Yeah. So,
I just thought that's like the perfect dub is Fooly Cooly for
so
English.
Good. And, but I think that's like strange. Oddly enough, that's the way that I would want Fooly Cooly is if it didn't have Haruko in it a second time. It almost as if it was like its own adventure in the same way that when Hollywood takes a license and they make a movie about it, it's like, oh, well, we use the same title, so it's the same thing. But you're like, no, it's not. It's a completely different movie. Just use the same title. Like Hitman.
Yeah, like Hitman.
Yeah. Or Fantastic Four.
Or Fantastic Four. But I don't know. I just right now, I do not feel comfortable with the idea of somebody else's fingers in the Fooly Cooly pie.
Okay. And I totally get that. I understand that. It just, with me being a fan, there are still a couple questions that I've always been curious about regarding Fooly Cooly. Like, if I ever had the chance to interview any of the guys who worked on Fooly Cooly who are part of Studio Trigger, that would be actually... The questions I would have for Fooly Cooly would be like what I would ask them within there, like whatever became of Nauta's mom, and why don't we see much of the brother or anything like that?
Yeah, but here's the thing: would they tell you? You know, maybe the reason why they didn't put it in the show in the first place is because they never wanted you to figure it out,
or maybe their intro would be, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they don't know. Maybe it was never a part of their thing to know, and. I think that's the whole point of Fooly Cooly is that it's supposed to be shrouded in mystery.
And they most certainly did that, but it was also so shrouded in these questions, but it was so, yet still so satisfying. You know, it felt like a complete story, even though nothing was, there's a lot of things that were left unanswered.
Pretty much. I mean, the show is about basically growing up. If
yeah,
you really think about it.
And as soon as, and as soon as Nauta grew up, there was nothing more to happen, you know? And so the fact that he's grown up to this point now, I suppose the only thing to go with was that he would change again.
Yeah.
Which I don't think he... I don't know what he would change into, but it would seem really weird and out of place, I think.
And I could totally understand that. But here's another question I have. Because, of course, you know, if they do it, if they do this continuation, the Pillows must absolutely be the band, their top pick to be doing the soundtrack and everything, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you would hope so.
Yeah.
Unless what they do is they take it from a completely different angle and they use a completely different band's music altogether. Okay. Like, they take another band completely and use it for another series.
Yeah, and then for this one, if the Pillows do pass or they decide to go with another band, I have four bands who I think would do a great job with keeping that sort of fully cooly vibe to it.
Jeez, okay.
So the two bands that, you know, they're from Japan. I'm sure you don't know as much as I do about them. Melt Banana and Electric Eel Shock are two bands. And they've also already worked with Studio Trigger on Ninja Slayer because they were two of the bands that contributed an end theme to it.
Okay, yeah. I did watch a little bit of Ninja Slayer, so...
Only a little?
Yeah, I don't have Funimation, so I can't watch more than two episodes.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, you know, King Records has been streaming the show on YouTube, and they've been actually streaming the English dub version of it, so the Japanese people can see how crazy they go with their version of it.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, it's pretty good. I think Chris Sabat does an amazing job as Ninja Slayer.
That doesn't surprise me. I think that he would really fit that role very well.
Yeah, I mean, he does, trust me. And then the two other bands, I have one American artist, and then I have one British artist who I think could really do a good job.
Okay.
And the first American artist, and first one, the American artist, Jack White, for the White Stripes, Racketeers, Dead Weather, and the solo stuff.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then the second band, the British band, I would have to go with Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah, I could see that too. It's funny because I'm not typically, I wouldn't really be a fan per se of their work, but I can absolutely see them filling that role.
Yeah, because I feel like that they have that same sort of similar style of music of the Pillows, but also with the style of what Fooly Cooly is all about.
Yeah, I enjoy music tenfold more when there's visuals to it.
Absolutely.
So, listening to the Pillows nowadays, the only thing I can think of is Fooly Cooly, which is why I'm okay with listening to them. But if I would just were to hear the Pillows without ever knowing that they were part of Fooly Cooly, I would question as to whether or not I would continue to listen to them.
You know, that's very interesting that you point that out, because for me, as someone who, you know, reviews music and everything, when I review an album, I try to get a visual perspective of what it is that they're trying to do, and I sometimes rate it from that.
Yep.
If I listen to an album and all I see is just blank, I see nothing there.
Yeah.
I know it's a bad album.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's true in some cases. I mean, like, that's the reason why music videos exist, you know, is to give you a visual cue as to what they're going for, like a message that they're trying to display. But I think with that rock opera-esque feel, I enjoy music a lot more. And that's the reason why I like the Pillows so much.
And, you know, I was about to bring that up, too. That's why I always appreciate rock operas that have that sort of story to it. Like The Who's Tommy or Quadrophenia, Fucked Up's David Comes to Life, The Decemberists, The Hazards of Love, and even recently, Titus Andronicus' The Most Lamentable Tragedy. I enjoy those because of the story that it brings, and also because I love the sound of the music.
Yeah.
Then you should listen to Cyborg Core.
I would like to listen to a little bit more Cyborg Core, actually.
Yeah, because Cyborg Core's new album is a sci-fi opera. That's like a complete story.
Huh. All right. But for the production sake of it, I would say that it's going to be a really long time before we see anything. Because if they are going to do the music thing like they have in the past, then it's going to take a really long time to coordinate anything. You know, they have to. I would say that if they're going to do something new, the pillows, if they use the pillows are going to have to compose a completely unique everything for the show.
Well, not necessarily. They would. I would have pictured that they would maybe do a new opening or an end theme for it. But I can see whoever does this, Production IG, going back into their past discography like they did with the first Fooly Cooly and put that towards, you know, the music of the show.
Right.
So, my final question is, when it comes to Fooly Cooly, if this remake ever happens, do you think it would ever match up to the original? And it's probably... It's probably an easy answer to answer.
Yeah, this is probably a unanimous answer of absolutely not. Absolutely.
No. It will never match up to the awesomeness of the original.
Yeah, and I think that it's going to hurt the original.
I don't think it will hurt the original.
Well, no, it wouldn't hurt the original because it's not the original's fault.
Right. The original is untouchable.
But I think the thing of it is they could do something like, for example, everybody knows this word, midichlorians.
Yes.
You know, they're gonna Star Wars Episode One it, and it's gonna ruin everything.
I feel like that's the only way that they could ruin Fooly Cooly is if they go back and do like a prequel of sorts.
If they do a history of Haruka before she meets Nauta.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's good. You know what that is? That's Dead Leaves.
Yeah, exactly. Although the history of one of the things that was left in mystery shrouds, which again in good moderation, was the history of Commander Amaral and Haruko. There's always a prequel story to that, and that would not touch the original. Maybe that's the way that it would go for me. That's the way I would accept it.
Like, maybe there's a reason why he has the big giant eyebrows and he always has to hide these little tiny ones.
Well, there is. They explain that in the show. Very subtly. That's what I'm talking about. They do it so subtly as to why they have why he wears the.
Oh, right. A brittle bullet. He mentions, you know, Haruko's making fun of him for the fact of him having little tiny little eyebrows.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole history when she hits him on the head and she tries to get the guitar out of his head, and it's just a little thing that she ends up using as a slingshot. And she says, "Small, as per usual." And then he says, "Why do you always make fun of me with that?" Commander Amaral and Haruko have this super deep history with each other. When Commander Amaral was Nauta's age, the same thing happened to him when he went with Haruko.
Oh!
And that was never explained deep enough. Like, they could have gone on to a whole nother series with Commander Amaral's backstory. But I never
thought of that.
Really?
No.
Yeah, if you go back and you just watch episode 5, it's all in there.
Okay. I guess I may need to do a little bit of rewatching. Well, any reason to watch Fooly Cooly is a good enough reason, in my opinion. There doesn't even need to be a reason to watch Fooly Cooly. And for our listeners who haven't watched Fooly Cooly, why haven't you watched
Fooly Cooly? What the hell is wrong with you?
Absolutely.
Actually, that's what we say at the beginning of our panel, right? Like, every year. Every year. If you don't know what Fooly Cooly is, get the hell out.
Well... We can only speculate what this whole licensing will mean for Production IEG and Fooly Cooly for its future. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen? Nothing could happen. Something could happen. Everything could happen. Anything can happen. Andrew Jonathan, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders Erase. And please tell our listeners where they can find your stuff.
Okay. If you guys want to listen to our podcast, you can find us at nerdyshow.com/wickedanime, where you can find both our podcast and our videos. But you can also find our podcast on soundcloud.com/wickedanime.
Yeah, and if you want to hear me go way more over the top ranty about this, listen to our episode coming out next Thursday.
Episode 73.
Yeah, because I go off. Like, this is, I was way too calm on this episode. I go off in the other podcast.
Yeah, this was the calm after the storm, basically.
Yeah.
Since we recorded this after we recorded your show.
Yeah.
And of course, you can watch our videos at youtube.com/wickedanime, wickedanimereviews, excuse me, where we semi-frequently release videos. We're working on videos right now.
I might do an episode on Fooly Cooly episode 5 now.
Yeah.
All this stuff coming out, I think that it kind of has to happen.
It's not a bad idea.
No, definitely do it, because a lot of people may have missed that as well.
Yep.
And of course, you can find us all around the internet. You can find us at facebook.com/wickedanime. You can find us at twitter.com and tweet us at @YoWickedAnime. You can find us at tumblr.com at wickedanime.tumblr.com. You can also email us if you want.
That's cool.
wickedanimereviews@gmail.com.
Do it.
Excellent. Google us. Just Google us. You'll find us.
Wicked.
Just Google Wicked Anime. You'll find us.
Please do, listeners. Please do. They are awesome at what they do. Honestly, seriously.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, I'm gonna Google us right now.
Now that sounds kind of dirty.
Hell yeah! There it is. nerdyshow.com/wickedanime. And then YouTube.com right below it. And then Tumblr. Then and then iTunes. And then Facebook. And then SoundCloud under Wicked City Wikis.
awesome. So right now we're going to spin a track from the Pillow Sawell Yamanaka's other band, The Predators, who just released a new record called Rock and Roll Pandemic. And from that record is called Start.
Slips away from me. I need the crowd to pray for me to turn this one around. I've worked far too hard to be this far from victory. I'm battered and I'm bruised, and I can't afford to lose. Oh, I'm love 40 down. As the day slips away from me, I have to say that honestly, I still haven't found the person who can take the strain of Deuce of Vine is back again. So I'll do this on my own. There's no one waiting when I'm done. And the time it takes for the surf to rise and fall, we'll find out if I am man or mouse, if I'm set to stand or fall. I'm left 40 down, and that can well recall the day my father is the ancient age that's now bearing down the barrel of my fault they came. And honestly, I am afraid I'm long in the tooth, but I'm ready for the truth. And the time it takes for the surf to rise and fall, we'll find out if I am man or mouse, if I am set to stand or fall. And the time it takes for the earth find flip his coin, we'll find out if I can take the strain, if I can make it through breakpoint. I'm not 40 down, I'm gonna tell this one around. I'm not 40 down, I'm gonna turn this one around. Breakpoint! Breakpoint! I'm gonna turn this one around.
An acoustic version of Love 40 Down by Frank Turner, which you can find on the deluxe edition of his fantastic new album, Positive Songs for Negative People. This month, Frank will be on tour in America with Beans on Toast and our good friends Skinny Lister. For more info, go to frank-turner.com. I, myself, am really looking forward to their Boston gig on September 26th. I know it's going to be a great show. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcasts, episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbashbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, and on Anime Amino at kingbabyduckesh. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbashbrigade and on facebook.com/landofesh. For all other articles under the Gaming and Geek realm, go to egmnow.com/Electric Sisterhood. And don't forget about the other shows under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Issues Program, Geek Aggro, and Structure Network. Remember, the Boston Festival of Indie Games is happening this Saturday at the MIT Johnson Athletic Center in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Tickets are $15 at the door, but if you grab them early, it's $12 online. And it all starts at 10 a.m. There's going to be games, games, and more games. And if you see me, if you see Ninja Panda, and if you see the Fleming Brothers as we're walking the expo, don't be shy and say hi. Trust me, this is going to be a whole lot of fun. Today we're going to be ending the show with a new song from Mosum Tonebender coming off of their most recent album. Earlier this year, they unleashed Rise from Hell, and now they have brought us right into heaven. And from this album is Wild Fancy Summer, which is how I would describe my personal summer. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps. Evan Borgo here, reminding you that what you hear each week on No Borders, No Race is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed what you heard this week and want to support one of these musicians, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites and labels, or even your local record store. We always give our listeners and readers the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun, so if something resonated with you, give the album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help bring your favorite J-pop artist closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out, and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.